Let's call this meeting to order. Begin with the roll call.
Commissioner Armalis?
Here.
Commissioner Gottlieb?
Here.
Commissioner Kirk? Elaine?
Oh, I don't think she heard you.
Here.
Yes, thank you. Commissioner Cragen?
Here.
Commissioner Fishman?
Here.
Chairman Crosby?
Here.
Commissioner Kilbride is absent. We have a quorum.
Okay. So let's start with the meeting minutes from January 21st. Did everyone have a chance to take a look at those minutes? Is there any edits?
I have one edit. Just my name is spelled with a C, not a K. It's consistently.
Well, I don't hear much.
Okay. Anything else? We good? So do we approve the?
Yeah, we need a motion to, a motion and a second to approve the minutes, and then I'll take a roll call.
To approve the minutes.
A second.
Good, thank you.
What's a C?
Let's see.
It's because my first name's with a K, that's.
You should change your first name.
Yeah.
All right. Commissioner Kirk? We're voting on the minutes.
Okay.
Yep. Commissioner Armalis?
They're okay, thank you.
Commissioner Gottlieb?
Approve.
Commissioner Cragen?
Approve.
Commissioner Fishman?
Approve.
Chairman Crosby?
Approve.
Thank you. Motion passes.
All right, so the continued discussion regarding affordable housing plan. John, do you want to?
Sure.
Take us through what edits you've made since our last meeting, and then we can.
You bet. So for the record, John Houseel, City's Planning and Zoning Consultant. There were a handful of changes, not many, a few that were recommended based on last time. So I'll sort of go over what those were. We addressed all of them. There was one thing that was discussed that didn't get in here, and we can talk about that. I chatted about it with staff, and Lisa and I can probably provide some context. There was a couple of places where there were some sentences where the wording was not very accurate or was offensive to some people, so we took it out. There was a sentence in there referring about trying to provide affordable housing, was sort of spreading the burden of doing so across the community as opposed to individual property owners. That language was stricken. There was a request, and there was language in there as well about trying to go for mixed residential buildings as opposed to a building that would be considered to be an affordable housing development, and that was not worded well, so that was taken out as well. I think there's still reference to sort of trying to get to a mixed residential, but the language that was offensive was removed. There was a request that we beef up the language in as defined by affordable housing need as defined by the Act, and then below that on page 3 as defined by the community. So we added some more language in there talking about the importance of providing affordable housing in the River Forest community for aging in place, for people with disabilities, for people who want to bring family members here, for providing housing and meeting the needs of current and future populations across every stage of life and every socioeconomic strata. So that language has been added to that, and that section was beefed up a little bit. There were a few different discussions that were suggested as being possible considerations the board should consider. So we added that section, possible additional considerations. Allow for taller and denser development in designated commercial mixed-use areas consistent with the recommendations of the plan in order to better accommodate possible inclusion of affordable housing as part of new development. Explore possible strategies by the means with which to preserve and enhance existing affordable housing in the village, such as possible funding or programs aimed at assisting with upkeep, maintenance, and improvement of identified property. The new ones were explore amending the zoning ordinance to accommodate accessory dwelling units, that's ADUs, as a conditional use in the R1 and R2 zoning district. An ADU is essentially a legal and regulatory term for a secondary house or apartment that shares the building lot of a larger primary house, either in an accessory or primary structure. So in the R1 and R2 single family districts, it's a way to consider having or allowing an additional dwelling unit where a single family home currently is by either having an additional dwelling unit in the primary structure or an additional dwelling unit like above in the garage. So this is recommending per your direction that the village ought to explore amending the zoning ordinance to allow those. There's a lot of exploration that would have to go into allowing that, but this recommendation says the village should look into that. The other one is that consider amending the planned unit development standard, section 10.19.3, to specifically identify consistency with the goals and policies of the Affordable Housing Plan as a standard of review for plan developments. We debated a little bit about this internally. The planning standards now, or the PUD standards now, refer to the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan talks about affordable housing. No other planning document in the village is specifically called out except the comp plan. So this would be a change of that. So it's something the village could consider adding as a standard to the PUD ordinance. The one other question or discussion that was raised that didn't make its way in here was specifically tying the approval of TIF expenditure to the provision of affordable housing. And after some discussions with staff and looking into it, that recommendation didn't put in here. Didn't feel as though, I think it could be, if this gets recommended to the board, it could be something outside of the plan document for the board to look at that the plan commission can recommend, but didn't feel as though TIF policy recommendations for expenditure funding should have a home in this document after some discussions. Didn't think this is a proper place for that type of language. So if this gets referred to up to the board, that can be exist outside of this, and the board can decide if they want to go that policy route or not. But that recommendation didn't make it into this draft as one of those potential possible additional considerations. All your other ones made it in here. So the language was changed. We beefed up the context for the need for affordable housing. And we added the two additional considerations you thought the board ought to look into going forward. So those all those changes were made. So the one that didn't get in here is that TIF specific language. So I don't know if Lisa or anybody else wants to provide context beyond what I did for that.
Sure. Just to be clear, TIF dollars, in order for it to be a TIF eligible expense, there has to be a public benefit for that money to be used. So I want to make sure we're clear about the context of using TIF dollars, what they can and cannot be used for, and how that may or may not tie to affordable housing. I think we understood the intent of what the commission was trying to say, but we struggled a little bit about whether or not an affordable housing plan is where a TIF funding policy should live. And we also wanted to make sure that the commissioners had some information about restrictions that are in place under the statutes regarding how those TIF dollars are spent. Right. So I think what you're trying to accomplish, and I went through and listened to the audio and we were going through the minutes, I think what you're trying to accomplish in making sure that TIF dollars are spent on items that have a public benefit is appropriate, but I think the statute already covers that. So the affordable housing plan, if it includes it, I think it's a memorialization of what we're already required to do within the state statutes. To the extent that you want to require more than what is in the state statutes, I think we would seek some direction on that. And if we have any questions about what are TIF eligible expenses in the state statutes, I've asked the attorney to be prepared to comment on that if you have any questions for him.
And we did review this with staff and with the lead village attorney, and what Lisa said is correct. There are TIF eligible expenses that can be used towards affordable housing projects, whether it's for assistance with the interest payments on the developments or for construction costs themselves. It's already in the TIF Act, so it is allowed. It's not a financing tool, so it's really not something that we would feel would be appropriate inside of the affordable housing plan, but it is an incentive that's already there, as Lisa said, in state law. The village wouldn't be able to include additional expenses that are outside of the TIF Act that could be used for affordable housing, but as it stands presently, it is somewhat generous.
So with the exception of the TIF specific discussion, everything else, I believe, based on a review of our notes and minutes and at least the listening to the audio, is reflected in the changes. But those were the changes that we talked about and the direction that was given from last plan commission meeting.
I assume everyone's had a chance to kind of review this beforehand, and are there any other questions or concerns that you have with what the changes that have been made, where they should, anything at all that you want to bring to our attention?
And I think the changes do make it better. The language is more appropriate and it's tighter now. The additional considerations, I think especially the accessory dwelling units, is something the village ought to look into, and I think the direction to have the village look at these other things is a good addition to the plan. So I thought your direction was very good.
I thought at the last meeting we discussed putting some more data in about the status of housing and the demographics in River Forest, besides the definition of affordable River Force specific data? Is that?
I don't recall that. Lisa, do you? I don't recall. It wasn't in my notes, but again, it's hard for me to talk and to take notes, so mine might be a little bit spotty, but I don't, Lisa and I compared notes. I don't recall that.
I don't either, but to the extent that you want to include that,
we're
happy to entertain.
Whatever data is available, yeah. We can put in here, yeah. We put in here the data on River Force that was provided by the state that we have to go by. If there's other additional River Force data we want, we'd have to know what data it is you want us to include. And as long as it's available, we can put it in here.
Okay.
Concerning the TIF, so there's state legislation there's state directive that a certain amount of money needs to go or a certain percentage needs to go to the affordable housing. Because honestly, you guys were discussing this and I kind of would have liked to have reviewed that in the off period. So that would have been a nice little thing to have here.
Well, it's not
I'm
a
not
question.
Understanding.
Sure. It's not a question of that the funds should or shall be used for TIF for affordable housing expenses. It's that they are available. Specifically, there are two provisions that we can point to. 75% of the interest cost for development of low income and very low income housing is a TIF eligible expense. Now, that benefit would, of course, go to the developer, but the public benefit is the affordable housing itself. So it does inure to the public itself.
But are they, they're not mandated to do that, are they?
They're not mandated to perform the project unless it's a provision of the affordable housing plan. They're not also mandated to accept the assistance through the TIF funds. A developer likely would if it
is
available.
So why can't our plan point to say, to ask that those, that we do ask for that to be mandated or strongly suggest or at least have the board look at that and not have it buried somewhere in, how many pages are there in the TIF?
Yeah, it is somewhat lengthy.
A typical
developer
pages?
Is going to know that those incentives are available. And in the discussion of whether or not the development is going to be subject to affordable housing or qualifies for it, those incentives will be on the table, not because the village has to offer them, but because they are available
but
to the state.
Excuse me, a developer knows a lot of things, but developer does what's good for the developer,
right.
Not necessarily for affordable housing, especially not for what's good for River Forest.
Well, that's why
so,
we incentivize them.
Right.
Pardon?
That's why we incentivize them.
The incentive does assist the developer, but it does assist them to create the project on a more affordable basis for themselves as well.
Is there a way to call that out in here without creating new TIF policy because there's TIF eligible expenses?
Right.
You said if it's public benefit and it can be used for affordable housing, can't the plan say we recognize that affordable housing is a TIF eligible expense?
And that could be a simple,
I mean,
yeah.
something
as
that reminds everyone
sure.
what you
yeah.
can spend TIF dollars on without creating new TIF policy. I mean, is that?
Yeah, I think it could be something as understanding that certain affordable housing related expenses are TIF eligible. Consider the appropriate expenditure of available TIF funds to promote affordable housing. Could be a statement like that.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of like pulling up what's in the state statute and pulling it up just to put a microscope on it saying, hey, where appropriate, leverage these for this good.
But I thought that's what we kind of agreed last time to do.
Yeah, our takeaway
so
from listening to this.
I kind of feel overruled here in between with not getting the information. I don't know if anybody else does. But
no.
I like to review this. I mean, I do review this stuff. When you
don't feel like you were quote unquote overruled. My takeaway, and again, in talking with staff and sort of listening back to it, our understanding of the way the discussion unfolded, or at least it was verbalized, and maybe it's because people didn't fully understand what TIF was or how it worked, that it seemed more of a mandate that you wanted to see in here, that if TIF funds were going to be used, they had to be used for. And that's the way my recollection of notes were, and I think that's the way the audio played back. So before we wrote anything like that, we didn't want to write something that didn't reflect what you wanted, and we didn't want to write anything that we couldn't do. So having this discussion, it'd be very easy to say if you wanted to approve a recommendation of this going forward, subject to the addition of that language, we can do that. Because it basically just highlights the potential of TIF funds for these types of projects due to state statutes availability. And we can put that statement in here someplace. That's easy.
And that's very easy to include. Yeah, I would agree. Because there are, as I said before, TIFs are fluid. A TIF could expire that is in place now that when an affordable housing development is proposed in 20, 30 years from now, that TIF may not be available anymore. Those funds that may be available. The TIF Act could change. It changes frequently. But reference to it like that would certainly be appropriate.
And I guess the reason, to Commissioner Morales's point, the reason we didn't put it in there was in my notes and going back and looking over it, it seemed like it was if someone is going to receive TIF funds, they have to be providing affordable housing as part of that receivement of TIF funds. That's what my recollection of the discussion where it was going, and I didn't think that was appropriate, nor really fitting of the village and how it uses TIF funding. So what we talked about here today is very simple to do. Yeah. So our concern was getting it right, reflectively of what you were talking about, and legally, not putting in something in here that we shouldn't do legally and wasn't reflective of the conversation. But I think now we can do both pretty easily.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So does the in the plan, the recommendation of at the end, the zoning changes saying, where was it? Is that something that would be covered under zoning mandates?
I guess what I'm thinking of is it would go on page six under possible additional considerations. We talk about potentially amending the PUD ordinance, potentially amending the R1 and R2.
Oh, that's where it is.
And then, you know, potential utilization of TIF funds where appropriate. I think it would go there as there are several different things a village could consider doing. This is one of them. But to put it in there, that's where I would put it. So it's sure not a mandate.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go to the goal. It goes to a possible way to get it done.
Sure.
Yeah, is where I would recommend it go.
So that TIF language stating that TIF allowable costs are affordable housing, and that would go under the number four recommendation on page six.
I would put it as a number five. Absolutely. I would put it. It's a very distinct thing. So I would put it as number five. I wouldn't want to sort of dilute
it. I'd keep it separate.
Yeah, I would keep it separate. Yeah. So I would create a number five and say something to the effect that, again, understanding that certain costs related to providing affordable housing are TIF eligible, when appropriate, the village should leverage TIF fund or expenditure of TIF funds to promote or support the development of a new affordable housing or something like that. We can float past you to make sure we get it correct, but that sentiment can be put in there, I think, under a number five. It would be the best way to do it.
Sounds good. Okay.
Would you be agreeable to that? Are you?
Yeah, no, I'm on board. Absolutely. I think we need to highlight that.
Yeah, we can do that.
As a reminder, because, again, it gets kind of lost, like as I referred to, like the DRB, having that extra little reminder, hey, affordable housing, we need to continue to try to find it.
So the omission wasn't to subvert, it was to, if it was going to go in, to get it right.
Yeah, sure.
It's not that, it's just all of a sudden, hey, it's not right, and
if we tried to be sneaky, we wouldn't have brought it up. Yeah. So, which is why I brought it up, to make sure we got it.
You weren't sneaky because I caught it wasn't in here.
So,
okay, anything else that you all noticed in the documents?
Well, I found my own written notes, and so maybe I wrote them down and didn't say them aloud.
That's okay.
My notes from the last meeting I had were to add the data we received in public comment about cost burden Village of River Forest residents about the mortgage and rental levels. We were talking about adding, like right now the only data we have is the owner occupied affordability chart in the metro area, and then what percentage we meet 9%. And I thought we were going to add more data on River Forest, like what our cost burdens are, separation is, like a snapshot in time.
I would want to verify that. What we got, and the only data we use in here, was the state's, because we have to use the state of Illinois' data. So we did. If we're going to start putting in the document data outside of that, talking about River Forest, I would want to verify that burden and expenditure versus income. I don't want to just assume because it was stated.
I mean, isn't that census data?
No, and I don't know.
You get that data.
It came from public testimony, which is why I want to.
I mean, not necessarily the public, but there are resources.
And this is what I'm saying. If we know the data you want, we can go and try to find it, but I wouldn't want to just pull forward necessarily. And maybe that the testimony given was spot on accurate. It might not be. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it needs to be verified.
Yeah, and I just think it's important to have context, because when you look at affordable housing plan, you're like, oh, we've got 9%. But when I've talked to other people about it outside of this, when they say, oh, affordable housing, we don't have any affordable housing in River Forest. And then I say, oh, we've got 9%. And they, and I said, but actually they recommend you don't spend more than 30% of your income on housing. And we've got a much higher cost burden. And here's some stats. And people go, wait, no, that's for the whole United States. And I say, no, that's actually in River Forest. And so I think having that context in the plan, even if it's a snapshot from whatever the most available public data is, that's verifiable, would really help the context when we pass it to the village for discussion. Uh-huh. And I think highlights the importance of the plan, not just we have to do it from the state, but really what, based on our median income and our housing prices and what these mortgage numbers and such are. And I don't even know if that includes property taxes, since that's such a big point of discussion, that it, I just think having the data about our village in here would be helpful.
Sure. And so I guess going back to John, where do we go for that?
Well,
I mean, like, what, how do we, where do we, you there, talk to? Where
there
do,
are
we,
different
is that
sources.
For us to do, or you, do you have,
well, I think we should do that. Yeah, I think we can do that for you. There are other sources that are out there, but we also need to say, is it 30%? Is it 35%? Is it 40? Is it 25%? There are different standards put out by different organizations. There's not one universal. It is this. And I think in public testimony, it was said some people choose to live in River Forest knowing it's going to be a higher percentage because it's worth it to live in River Forest. So if it's a choice to live in River Forest, it's a little bit higher to say, well, that's not affordable. Well, if they're choosing to, and it's so I want to be
not a judgment, but just stating
right.
the facts, I think. Would
but
be
I want to be careful that they're facts, I guess, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So and when you start, I just want to be real careful if we're going to put it in the document that is a true snapshot of the burden here versus the state says you have to use these numbers. I'm okay using those numbers. If we start injecting other numbers about the housing burden, I'm hesitant to do that. We can. I would really want to verify. And then we'd have to have a discussion is, even if it's technically accurate, again, 30% is not universally, it's 30%, 30%.
Yeah.
So there would have to be a consensus that you're comfortable using the 30% and then putting those numbers in. I don't know. So it's not as clean as it's like census data. It's not that simple. That's why I'm leery to put it in here and just use the states, because the states is the states. We have to use it.
How would this data be used in the plan? I'm a little bit confused.
I just meant for more context, because right now we have just, I mean, the plan, if taken by itself, just says we have 9% housing and what the state considers affordable. I don't think you get a snapshot of the housing breakdown in River Forest as much, because I don't think people, it's hard to envision what our affordable housing is when you see what the median income in it is here and what the all that how many units we have of which type and that breakdown for River Forest, because it's hard to contextualize just a 9% without that.
I guess I keep thinking, I'm not sure why that is important to be in the plan. I don't know I'm not getting the value of it. Why that's important, why that's not just something that the village could, you know, come up with that information, share it, you know, on the internet, or why is it important to be in the plan?
I think it's important to be in the plan because when you look at the plan, it seems like we're building affordable housing or valuing affordable housing for someone else. And I think if you have that data, you realize that it's for all of us, that affordable housing affects everyone. It's not just certain households in River Forest, that we have all different types of households in River Forest, and they're not all single family, and they're not all like designated one or the other. Having just describing what everything is in River Forest as far as the number of housing units, I think helps bring context to a discussion of affordable housing, in quotes. And maybe it was that.
I guess I don't see it in living in this, in the plan here.
Is it a snapshot of March? What's the date today? March 4th or some 3rd?
You can pick a recent year for where we have
2020. Do we want to say, are you envisioning putting in the plan? This is where we're at today, so that if we revisit
change,
the plan,
you have it where we were,
or
at this point,
or do you want something like? You know, in my industry, we call it the CRU, where there's this, that we want village government to refer to some kind of snapshot of the basic status of things in that period of time that they're looking at. So like, you know, like what's the, for us, what's the price of scrap or something?
In a 3-year period or a 5-year period, do you mean like a contemporaneous snapshot or?
Yeah, that it can be kept, or you just want it in the plan that this is where we are here today? Or do you want that something to direct whoever, I don't know.
I think a snapshot from today when we made the plan would be helpful in the future if we look back to show where we were and from housing affordability and cost burden.
I'd go for that.
So, you know, I guess what makes me nervous is our ability to trust that other data. And if we've made all these decisions based on the specific data that the state has given us, and then we introduce other data that we don't know if it agrees or conflicts with it, are we then going to revise the whole plan based on the new data? You know, I guess if we have
not using new housing data, I think you were very clear at the last meeting that the requirements for the affordable plan require us to look at the data that was provided by the state because it changed.
That's what
so
the state
weirdly.
Goes by.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm just saying, add some extra data for context, and I think we could mistrust U.S. Census data or what it would have to obviously be from a state or federal source on median income and things like that in the village, not just the number of units that are.
Do we have a reference in this to a source of truth?
That might be a good way to handle it. We're referencing saying it. You tell me what data are we?
Well, as the commissioner just said, it would have to be a state or federal source to be a verifiable whatever. I'd have to look to see. You can get census data. Now's a tougher time to get census data because we're on the verge of the next one. So there's special census data and there's other things. There's the community survey. There's other things. But there's data and then there's interpretation of data and what it means. So, again, we can look at different data sources and bring it forward. You can get information on average home price, household income. That's all data you can get. But extrapolating average household income and average household price to a actionable or a meaningful number on affordability. I don't know you can extrapolate that from those two things. It would have to be a more specific type of question on how much people spend of their income on their home. And the census doesn't tie that together. The U.S. Census doesn't tie those two things together. Like I can say, Cross River Forest, here's the home income. Cross River Forest, here's the average home price. But there's nothing that says what the percentages of this person and that person and what they make and what they spend on the home and what that percentage is. So it doesn't, it's data, but it's just census data. So it would have to be something that begins to draw those correlations at a level beyond community or census block data. It would have to be beyond that to be a percentage of how many people of this unit or this percentage or how many people in this type of residential spend 35% of their income on their home versus 30% of their income on home. The census doesn't get you that. The U.S. census doesn't get you that. And then I don't know that the state has anything, a state verified database that provides that. It would have to be a different source.
John, I'm looking at the affordability charts that are provided under the Affordable Housing Planning and Appeals Act.
Right.
And they talk about income limits, affordable rent limits, drawn from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development guidelines.
Right.
That may be a better jumping off point so that we're looking at what the state uses that we're required to develop a plan based on along with that. So that may be another source of data. I mean, the American Community Survey it's not the official census number. The American Community Survey is, I believe, what told us that we lost a certain number of housing units between 2013 and 2018 that we can't verify.
You said we lost like 100 some odd housing units. Well, we clearly didn't.
We didn't. The American Community Survey takes a sample of the population, surveys them on a frequent basis, and draws conclusions based on what they believe is a representative population, a representative sample of the overall population. It's meant to keep the census data living and not just frozen in time every 10 years. That gives us some sort of evolution in that 10-year period, so that we know generally what we're looking at. But the official data, the most reliable data, is typically the decennial census data.
Right.
So I think that's why John and I are struggling a little bit, is because while they are certainly good sources of data, they are official sources of data. We just have to recognize that whatever snapshot we draw, where you pull it from, I think David's question is still valid, is if it isn't impacting, or if it is impacting the overall policy question or the overall policy statement, I just want to be mindful of that,
right.
That we could potentially be using data, and the state is requiring us to use data that we disagree with. So this is a little bit of a tricky problem.
Yeah.
And I think we're just all struggling with that. Because I think everyone here has good intentions and is trying to do the right thing and is trying to get on the right side of this policy, but we're struggling a little bit with that. And I appreciate your comments about context. I don't disagree with you. I understand where you're going with it. But just when we start bearing down into it as your data people, as your your specialists and trying to help guide you through this and respond to what you want us to do, we just want to, again, make sure we get it right and we're doing what you ask us to do.
Right.
And so we're just struggling with it.
Right. And even the HUD guidelines is not just data, it's HUD guidelines. And it's not like they hunkered down in Washington and said, let's do a close detailed examination of river forest and come up with guidelines for river forest. Their HUD guidelines have a much broader applicability. So we went by the data set we have to use as the data set that is reliable, bankable, that we have to use for this exercise. And didn't want to get into guidelines or surveys or other things that may or may not be as reliable, or people might disagree on the extrapolation or interpretation of that data. So we use the data set we have to use. That was why we did it. So again, we can put other data in here if we know what data you want to put in here. I'm initially was hesitant to. We could, but I'd be.
Can we add a short statement that suggests what your concerns are, or not concerns, but the sentiment behind your push that the cost of housing is.
I suppose you could do a thing that said, regardless of state updates to the information, the River Forest from time to time examine the affordability of. I don't know how you would word that, but I don't know. We could. But I think I guess I kind of agree with, again, so I'm just repeating myself, but we use the data source we have to go by, which is why we used it. There's not 100% consensus on other data sources or surveys or how they're used. There is, depending on who you're talking to or how the data is used. And if we did something that varied a little bit from the state's data, would it change the policy you've put in place in this plan? Because we still have to get to 10%.
Yeah.
And the state still says we're at 9%. So I don't know.
And
so I would need more direction, okay. I guess.
I just think at a minimum, we have to have census data about, over assuming that census data has how many owner-occupied houses we have, what the median income is, all these, like a snapshot of River Forest, just to put context to the plan. I mean,
I don't know about owner occupied versus rental. It might, but I don't know by percentage.
Let me
It has median income for River Forest. I mean, you can go on Wikipedia and see that. You can go on,
I don't
census.
Mean to belabor this. I've just,
no, no,
I,
no.
I assumed
so,
that this was easily available information.
And I guess so you can get, household income, you can get that per the village. You could get average household income per the village, household price per the village, but that doesn't get you at anything with regard to the affordability. It gives you an aggregate income and an aggregate expenditure, and it doesn't give you a percent of how many people might be above the 30% threshold. You can't draw those conclusions from census data.
The reader could use that context to jump to whatever conclusion they want.
Sure. It wouldn't be very telling, is I guess what I would say. It wouldn't be very informative.
Hmm.
But we could add census data in here. That's very simple to do.
By the time we're done, we'll have new data.
Well, that's the other thing. By the time we're done doing it now, we'd have new data in a year and a half.
It might take a skosh longer. I have confidence that we'll get it done before the federal government.
Yeah. Oh, we would, yeah.
She said sarcastic.
You're wearing your pen.
I'm wearing my pen.
So.
Chairman, the public seem to have some comment on some of the very things we're talking about, and we got into this discussion, and maybe we should listen to them before.
No, absolutely, it's on the agenda. I wanted to first get everything, our notes
because
from
there
our
was
last
some
meeting,
comment,
and anyone
that
didn't have an opportunity to speak at last meeting, we're going to have.
No, but I mean, for the exactly what we're talking about now, there was comment in some of the.
Go ahead and bring it up then.
Things and. But it was brought up, I think Mr. Lauber brought up some of this about the what Commissioner Cragen wants or is asking for here. And I have to tell you, I don't totally understand it, so I'm not a good one to comment on it. So I just thought maybe it'd be best just to listen to what the public says and then discuss this. But that's up to you.
No, yeah, absolutely. That we're gonna. That's
okay.
That's our next step is to
okay.
open to the public.
Thank you.
I'm not by no means am I.
It just seems like we
forgot
about
this. No, we're not. I've not forgotten about them.
Okay.
It's on the agenda. We will get to the public. I just want to be sure everyone on the committee has had a chance to revisit their notes from the last meeting, get the information, and then we'll open it
oh,
up
okay.
and we can discuss
thank
again.
You, thank
okay.
You.
No
I think
problem.
This draft looks great.
What's that?
I think this draft looks
okay.
great.
Okay. Great. So let's move on then.
Subject
let's,
to
wait,
adding the five about the TIF.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to make sure.
And you're gonna check and see. You're gonna take a look at the census and while we're talking to see if there's any other data in there or no.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the American Community Survey population estimates and data estimates as of July 1, 2019. They have the population characteristics. They don't provide the number of housing units, owner-occupied housing rate, median value. Monthly owner costs with a mortgage, monthly owner costs without a mortgage, gross rent. I mean, that's what's available. Some of it's
right.
available, some of it's not.
what source is that?
This is I'm looking at the data tables in the American Community Survey.
What is the American Community Survey?
So we have the decennial census, which is every 10 years. That's what's coming up on April 1st. The American Community Survey is what I was talking about, where they send out surveys to different people within the country and extrapolate data about your community based on what they believe is a representative sample of the population.
So is that a government source then?
It is, yeah. It's the federal government. It's the U.S. Census Bureau.
But it's a survey. It's not, and it may be statistically valid, and it's, but it's not. It's not
it is
data.
Statistically valid.
Right.
So right. So the population estimate for July 1, 2018 was 2,903. Our population estimate for April 1st, 2010 is 11,172 people. So according to this, we've lost almost 300 people. We'll find out in 2021
right.
if that's still the case.
Right.
So the American Community Survey provides their best estimate of data since the last decennial census.
And that's why I was initially hesitant to use it because it's a survey, mm-hmm. it's statistically valid, but it's not the same as a data set, if you know what I mean. It's not like getting a data table, Excel spreadsheet of everybody's mortgage monthly rate, of everybody's
yeah.
income, of everybody's percent. That's data. Survey results can be statistically valid, but it's a statistically valid representative survey of the characteristics of the community. And that's not, I would consider to be as actionable for this as the state data we have to use. May be interesting, but I would hate to put it in here and codify it as
got it.
Data. Because I wouldn't consider professionally as being data. It could be a guideline or something. But.
All right, so why don't we go to the public, get
yeah.
comments, and then we can circle back on the exact bullet points of what we want to add and edit in here. And then we can wrap it up, okay? So anyone that didn't have an opportunity at our last couple meetings to speak, and you'd like to give us your feedback now would be a great time to do that. Anyone?
I'm on the list.
On the list.
On the list.
On the list. Okay.
The list.
Suzanne Herbert.
Okay. Hi. I really appreciate your discussing this. It's close to my heart because I came to River Forest as somebody who needed affordable housing. And I was divorced and didn't have a job and was able to buy one of the duplexes on Lake Street and send my children to River Forest Public Schools. And now I'm remarried and our son and his wife are benefiting from affordable housing in River Forest. And we're thrilled to be able to have them in the community with us. And I like to thank you, Commissioner Cragen, for bringing up the idea of knowing specifically about people in River Forest and how it's really affecting us. I do, just because, you know, it's people who I know, and it's also people who I see. Like, I live near the duplexes on Oak Avenue in Harlem, and I see single moms walking their children to Roosevelt, and I'm remembering when that was me, right? So it's personal for me. And I commend you for your work on this. I know it feels thankless, probably, and you're going to come up with something that you have to send to somebody else, and you're not sure how much of it's going to make a difference. But to me, it makes a big difference that you're working on this, both for my history and for my family. So I have four things I would like to urge you to include. To amend the comprehensive plan to establish a policy of preserving existing housing affordable to households with modest incomes. And honestly, I think we all know what we mean by modest incomes. I think it's okay to include data from the census, even if it's going to change in a year. A snapshot is a snapshot, and you know, we're all moving through time. I think it wouldn't hurt to have a snapshot in the comprehensive plan. I would like you urge you to adopt effective, incentivized inclusionary zoning. I would like you to adopt a policy that at least 15% of dwelling units in all new developments that include multifamily housing be affordable to households of modest incomes. And finally, I would like you to adopt a precise policy for TIF districts to either maintain existing multifamily and single family housing affordable to households with modest incomes, or replace existing affordable housing with new affordable units in new developments in the TIF districts on a one-to-one basis. Again, thank you very much for listening to my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next.
Dan Lauber.
Thank you for this opportunity to address you again. Many of the questions you were talking about regarding data were answered in the memo I gave you prior to your January 21st meeting. And if you go back to that, you will see the tables that Commissioner Cragen has been talking about and that John has been trying to figure out where the sources are that identify the proportions of the proportions of rental and single family housing and ownership housing are all available from the American Community Survey. What you need to understand is that there are three different American Community Surveys. There's the one-year estimates, the three-year estimates, and the five-year estimates. The five-year estimates are the most reliable. The most recent five-year estimates came out in December, and those are the ones that ought to be used. The ones that I had in the material I sent you were the ones that were 2013 to 2018. The data on median price of on rent, median rental unit cost, rents are all in the survey. All of this data is in the survey. And you are able to identify the proportions of people who are renters that are cost burdened and severely cost burdened, and homeowners with and without a mortgage that are cost burdened, all from the community, American Community Survey. It's all right there. It's readily available to anybody The one trick right now is that under the Trump administration, they're moving it to a new website and making it a little bit harder to get a hold of the data. Big surprise. I provided you with a memo at the last minute tonight, and I apologize for it, but those pesky clients have been getting in my way, and we only got a hold of this plan on Thursday, which is hardly adequate time to review it. But among the things you need to understand is that in housing, we look at medians, not average. So you would look to identify what the median household income in River Forest can afford. Can it afford the median priced condominium, the median priced single family home, the median priced attached single family dwelling? All these things are available. It's in the memo that I gave to Lisa that she distributed to you. About eight different items. The one thing that the American Community Survey is not reliable with is the price of housing, because people are being asked to estimate it. For that, in all the studies that we've done for cities range from District of Columbia to Clark County, Nevada, Fairfax County, Virginia, Houston, Texas, is we use the multiple listing service data. You find a friendly realtor, and you always can find one who will get you the printouts and the average numbers and median numbers of the cost of housing over each time period. The ACS, by the way, provides data that the decennial census does not provide. The decennial census does no longer ask the question about income. That's something only available from the American Community Survey. It was taken out of the census in beginning with the 2000 census. So all these things are available from the American Community Survey. And I can tell you, having done a lot of evaluations of cities' affordable housing programs, this is the stuff that you look at and you include in your plan, any affordable housing plan, because it provides the context. And if you look at the data that I gave you last time and included a chart that showed that our renters and even our homeowners have more than a quarter are very cost burdened, and about 40-something percent of our renters are cost burdened. Most of those are severely cost burdened. That severely cost burdened means spending more than half of your income on your housing costs. In terms of determining cost burden, it does include with home ownership the mortgage payments, the property tax payments, condominium association fees and such. Those are all included in estimating the cost of the housing. In my memo, I noted a number of deficiencies in this plan, which still is not ready for prime time. There's an assertion in the introduction that 15 to 20% should be what you have in a development, and the suggestion that all low income, all moderate income, all modest income is not desirable. First, you should be aware that there are cities around the country that require 35% of the units in new developments be inclusionary. They provide a density bonus, but 35% is what they require. Second, I find this language to be very insulting to my neighbors immediately north of us at Oak and Harlem, who live in a development of condominiums that are all modestly priced. Are you suggesting that this building, this set of buildings, is a disaster? That it's something that shouldn't be in River Forest? I don't think we want to say that sort of a thing.
We should. Anywhere in there, something's a disaster.
Yeah.
Let's not use explosive.
It's not sensationalized.
Just turning this off.
Nothing in here that says an existing building is a disaster because it's affordable. So if you want to comment on a sentence, we can address it. But I don't want to use language like that because it's not.
Good. Let's take out any suggestions that a development that is all modest income is undesirable. They are not undesirable. You may talk about one that's 500 units. That's a different story. That's not going to happen here. Speaking of spirit in the community, by the way, at the bottom of page 2 of my memo, it's diversity, not spirit of the community. What is affordable? One reason for including all of the data that normally goes in an affordable housing plan is that affordability isn't a current concern just for households with incomes of 60 and 80% of the area median income. It's a question of affordability extends beyond them to include households of moderate and middle incomes as well. I do have a concern about this best interest language on page 4 of the under what is affordable. I think that needs to be clarified. I don't quite know what is meant by best interests. The incentives that are discussed, zoning mandates, I would urge you to remove that section completely. I think that the zoning mandates, as described here, constitute an illegal taking of property without just compensation under the Fifth Amendment and should simply be removed from the ordinance, from the plan altogether. Zoning bonuses, what we're really talking about is incentivized inclusionary zoning, and I think that we can create a better tone by talking about it that way. The paragraph that is in there, however, the regulations being relaxed were presumably adopted for the protection of the community, especially enabling property owners, allowing more intensive development, may adversely affect the character of the neighborhood and possibly diminish the value of neighboring properties. Neighboring property owners should bear the cost. That should be removed. It is unsubstantiated. On page 4 of my memo, I give you several sources that show, have found consistently that affordable housing does not reduce property values, and in fact, in some instances, increases property values. I give you the citations where you can download a couple of these. I also offer to give you PDFs of a slew of studies that confirm that indeed affordable housing, like we're talking about, does not reduce property values, and it really sets a very negative tone to suggest otherwise, especially when there's no basis for it. If you're going to make that kind of assertion, at least provide citations. I don't think it's possible to do that because they don't exist. So on page 4 at the top of my memo and page 3, the quote is at the bottom of page 3 of my memo. It's under zoning bonuses in the plan.
In the plan?
In the plan, it's under zoning bonuses.
Page 5, but again, just real quick, I've got to clarify something. This doesn't say affordable housing can very impact property values. Not at all. It talks about relaxing zoning standards for height, setback, parking, or bulk to create a physical structure that may have problems for adjacent property owners. That could be impacting adjacent properties. Says nothing about affordable housing lowering the property value of adjacent properties. I want to make sure I'm willing to discuss anything in here. I am, have been for the last 3 meetings, but I will not let something in here be mischaracterized to the point of being inaccurate. We don't say anything as a disaster. We don't say affordable housing will lower property values. The last 3 statements you've made are simply not in here. They're simply not in here, not even close. So I want to be careful about how we characterize this, because I would disagree wholeheartedly with your characterization.
Well, I would disagree with your characterization, I'm afraid. And the tone of this plan is not exactly friendly to affordable housing. It acts as this is a burden, and it begrudgingly accepts it. If this village can adopt a welcoming ordinance that welcomes undocumented immigrants to River Forest, then it can adopt an affordable housing plan that is welcoming to people with modest incomes in River Forest.
And I appreciate all your comments, and we do value your opinion. But I just don't want you to repeat what we've heard from last week or last month, because we've gone through many of these things. We have your input, and we will consider that as we move forward on this.
Well, I'm concerned about that because it seems nobody remembers all the data that I provided last time. Was a discussion for 20 minutes at the beginning, and the answers were all there in the material that I gave you over a month ago. Let me just stress that at a minimum.
Let's wrap this up if we can.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, please do.
I think that this plan would be enhanced and be much more effective if it were to include the 4 recommendations that I hope the plan would include. That Suzanne actually talked about recommending the comprehensive plan to establish the policy of preserving affordable housing, recommending adopting incentivized inclusionary zoning, recommending the policy of 15% the units in all the developments that are multifamily be affordable, and recommending adopting a policy for the TIF districts to maintain the affordable housing and have one-to-one replacement. These are all things that are perfectly appropriate for affordable housing plan and is put in terms of recommending to the village board to make adopt these policies or these ordinances, that is perfectly appropriate for an affordable housing plan. Thank you.
Ross?
Ross Wensloff?
I have lived in the River Forest Gardens for 65 years, and I've seen a lot of changes over the years. And it's actually very serendipitous that I'm still there. I've been in the same block for 65 out of the 66 years that I've been here. And in the 50s, it was all rental up until sometime in the 1980s. Even in the 1980s, I think my rent for one bedroom was $140, which is very affordable coming out of college. Even when I went condo, I think I got my unit for, it started out at $17.5. I think we had been outbid by a Greek developer, and we convinced him not to develop it because otherwise none of that would be affordable housing. It would be out of everybody's range. But we managed to develop it ourselves, and even with that, we're the only condo association that is actually up to fire code, because we have, you know, somebody on our board that happens to be an electrician, and all the other condos said, can't be done, too expensive. We did it. So I'm just hoping that anything new that comes down the pike will still have something set aside so that people in my position can afford to live in River Forest. Because the only thing that kills us right now is that we lost a lot of our parking, because we used to park in where the gas station, where that mini mart is now, that took about 40 of our parking spaces away. So you know, now we have to convince people that don't care about cars to live in our place or park in the municipal thing. And the original polling place was actually in the building I live in, 7214. I don't know how they managed that, because those machines were huge, and to bounce that down our stairs and be in my basement for many years was kind of crazy. When I first became a voter, my mom had just passed away, and she had been the election judge for about 30 years, and I was the election judge for another 30 years, and the only thing that stopped me is I broke my arm. And when I did that, I was with four other election judges. They were all in their 80s, and they fell asleep. And that was the only time that I was not able to get my results in on time. I finally had to just bring everything in. But if you have any questions about the history of our complex.
Where is your complex exactly? Harlem and?
Harlem and Oak.
And Oak. Right.
Between Oak and when I grew up, there was a Kroger station
Chicago?
On Chicago Avenue, where they're building that new complex.
That, like Mobile Mini Mart.
Right.
Yeah, it used to be Arco. It used to be a Sinclair. There were actually two Sinclairs within a block of each other. Yes. Yeah, I grew up with a dinosaur. And when I grew up, we used to have four different buses that we can get on. Now I can only get on one. And the only bus that I can get on takes me three blocks to the Green Line. I said, that's crazy. But let's see, what else did I want to... I've been on our board for about 30 years. So if you have any questions about what our situation is like, the only thing that's killing me is that I'm now paying more for cable than I'm paying in assessments, which is crazy. When I moved in there, I got basic cable for $2 a month, and now you're lucky to get it for $150.
Yeah,
but I'm sorry, I'm not a public speaker. I didn't think that I would speak tonight, but someone said, you know, you really should talk because you've been here forever. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer in private. Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lydia Manning.
Thank you. Lydia Manning, resident 755 William. Thank you all for doing this work. I know it can feel thankless. I just want to advocate for the older adults in the village, and I would encourage us to put some language in here if it's not already about, I know we talk about accessory units and, you know, different types of dwelling, but I would love for there to be age-friendly language specifically in here that goes beyond just aging in place. I don't know how many of you all know, but I think last week, right, we moved forward with the creation of the age-friendly ad hoc committee. So I just would encourage us to be intentional about that type of language. And then also maybe encouraging the village to explore accessory units, alternative dwelling, but also even potentially co-housing and creative and innovative ways that we can keep our elders here and aging in place in an affordable manner beyond just the reduction of property taxes.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Is that it, or do
we have a few more?
Okay.
Phyllis Rubin, are you here? Would you like to go? Oh, she left. Okay, thank you. Judith McDevitt.
Yes, I have Phyllis wrote out a statement, so
okay.
I can summarize a few parts.
We did. So
we received.
Yeah,
it.
We did receive a copy of a few statements just to make sure it gets in the audio and on the record. We received, Mr. Lauber's memo. We received Ms. Rubin's memo today, so we appreciate that. That's been distributed to the commissioners. And we also received a letter from Phil Carmody at Opportunity Knox. That's also been distributed to the plan commissioners.
Okay. I just have a couple of comments.
Sure.
Myself.
Great.
Judith McDevitt from 411 Ashland, 5B, so I live one floor below Phyllis, we're neighbors. And both of us are in the smaller affordable units, if you want to call them, in our condominium building. So, and we were very glad to be able to purchase the condominium we live in when we came to River Forest in 2003, and we didn't know anybody else in River Forest, but we settled here and we liked the village very much. And I appreciate the thoughtful way the village goes about formulating its policies and listening to everybody. I did have some concerns, particular concerns about preserving affordable housing that we already have here. It's a small amount of affordable housing. That's made it very clear in the draft policy. And it does need to be, even to get to 10%, it's not very many units you need to add, but that leaves it at the bare minimum that the state law is asking for, and that was quite a long time ago before we had a much greater exacerbation of housing costs in the state and for many more families. So in the TIF districts, I'm thinking about if there was redevelopment there that involved demolition of existing affordable housing. I think it's very important to include the recommendation that any such affordable housing be preserved. And in particular, I'm thinking about the families that live here in River Forest in affordable housing. And they have their children in our schools, and our schools are so excellent. And why would we want to push anyone out of River Forest in the course of redevelopment? So, and especially kids that are in our school system, push them out because where they were living was demolished. So I really think that some attention to how a TIF district should be managed. It's very important part for us to think about and think about what this village and District 90 has done in really growing their whole equity stance in making our schools welcoming and good learning places, regardless of shape, size, color, religion, anything. And that everybody is welcome here. So let's reflect that policy and that stance in our housing policies as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Janice and David Brent, you're welcome to come up.
Good evening. My name is David Brent. I am owner of a condominium at 1533 William in River Forest, and I live there. I'm also the president of that condominium association that includes that that condo. I just wanted to comment briefly and kind of bring some kind of a real-time feel to some of the things that have been discussed tonight. That our condominium is included in the TIF district on North Avenue. And our owners, over the past year or so, have been exploring the possibility of selling. I guess that's the easiest way of putting it, of ending the condominium and selling it to someone else who would use the property in whatever way they saw fit. And we have the ongoing discussion about affordable housing has come to our attention, and we believe, and we may not be unique in this thought, but that our condominium, as it's standing right now, the use of that could be affordable housing. And I have to apologize to Commissioner Gottlieb. I'm not sure how much he's our neighbor, and I'm not sure how
also
much of this. And he's also in the TIF. That's right, because there is a line of single family homes that are also in the TIF. So I'm not sure if he's heard any of this floating over the fence, but that is the case. So the things that you're talking about in terms of the TIF and in terms of finding affordable housing or the potential for affordable housing within the village, those are things that are happening. You know, they're there. The opportunities are there. The possibilities are there. And we have actually taken the step of presenting some of this to Mr. Palm in by letter. So if perhaps someday there will be further developments, so to speak, along these lines. And I just wanted to give you that flavor that there is some reality. This is not just a theoretical discussion. There is a reality there that I'm sure involves other properties throughout the village. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the list of people who've already would you like to come up too? I'm sorry. Sure. Absolutely. Take your time. And if there's anyone else after that who did not sign in but wishes to speak when Mrs. Brent is done, please feel free to come up.
I think you should stay. You're good neighbors.
We should stay. Okay. Hi, my name is Jan Brent, and I do live at 1533 William. And I just want to ask a couple of questions, but I also wanted to say that, you know, we've been working on this with our building for the last year, and we have 100% compliance that people, the 100% of the people that are, there's 16 condos, have agreed that they want to sell their condominiums and move to not more affordable housing, because it really is affordable. Just they want to move to a high-rise building where they have an elevator, or just for different reasons. It's an aging population in that building. So I just wanted to tell you about that, because that too is going in real time. And right now we have 100% compliance that want to do this. But who knows if, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, if people can't wait and decide to sell their condominium on their own And, you know, we want developers to look at anybody. We want River Forest to come and look at it. The building is nice, and it's well cared for, and it's up to code. And I think that would make it really affordable housing for people. And so that's just my blurb about 1533 William. But I did want to ask a question about the affordable housing thing. Could the village buy a building and then could they rent it out to people for affordable housing?
I'm going to punt to the attorney. I'm going to punt to the attorney on this one just for a moment. Go ahead. So there's two questions, I think. Right. One is, legally, can they do it? And that's where I'm going to look at the attorney. And policy-wise, I mean, I can't speak on behalf of the village board as to whether or not they would do that. I think to the extent that you want to have that conversation, I can certainly, you know, you've talked to Eric, and we can certainly put you in touch with the right people. I theoretically, as long as it's not illegal, yes, I suppose we could, but I just don't want to go on the record and make a policy statement on behalf of the board that,
okay, yeah. The reason I ask that is because you could buy it now while everybody's in line, you know, and on board. And then it also is in the TIF district. So you could rent it out for a couple of years until you're ready for the TIF, because we do need, I mean, our building butts up against the alley and there is no spot and there's no parking behind North Avenue. So we're thinking, hey, you could do whatever you wanted with it. But it would be a key player, I think, in a TIF district, as would Mr. Issa.
Well, I'll be certain to pass the comments along to Eric Palm, that's the village administrator, and just let him know that you were here and do you want to continue the conversation. But,
my house is for sale, too.
And he wants the TIF, too.
Were you in sales previously? Because that was good.
I'm impressed. All right. Is there anyone else who did not sign up but would like to address the Plan Commission? No?
No.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's go back to the plan here. So far, as far as changes that we'd like to see happen here, the fifth bullet point under the possible additional considerations, utilizing TIF funds, putting some language in there. I don't know. How does it work? Like, with, well, let's table that. How that plays out. But anyway, that, and then there's the discussion of the data. Is there anything else beyond that? That this is kind of that point where we need to.
I have four things.
Yeah.
I made a list. I think you addressed the we've all talked about the TIF eligible costs and pointing that out as a fifth item. That was one of the things on my list. Data for context from the American Community
Survey.
Sorry, I keep messing that up. And as was mentioned, if the 5-year data is the most accurate, whatever's the most accurate, or MLS data, if that's more accurate. I trust the data people on what would be the correct source for context, so we can look back at this when we revisit the plan at a later date, and for the village board when they vote on this and make decisions on going forward with zoning changes, so they also have full context of where we stand now for number of rental units and all of that. The other thing that was mentioned by Opportunity Knox, the letter they sent.
Mm-hmm.
First, I want to say I'm really happy you added the affordable dwelling unit in a way I could understand how it, what it encompasses. So thank you. Affordable dwelling units were also mentioned by Opportunity Knox as one of their goals for one of the many ways they could provide housing for intellectually and developmentally disabled adults. And keep them near their services. And since they're located in River Forest in a TIF district, is the community center in the TIF district on Madison, or is that?
I believe that.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I just thought there was a data point for people who don't have the letter in there that I thought was really telling too. that a third of the students that are at OPRF that will be eligible through the site program to go into Opportunity Knox are actually all River Forest residents, too. One of the things, and this gets to my fourth thing to as a comment, and it gets to Lydia's comment, too, is that his letter described not just affordable housing, but integrated supportive housing. And then the woman Lydia who spoke talked about age-friendly or dementia, I guess we're a dementia-friendly community now, age-friendly or co-housing. And I don't know if on the bottom of page two, if that's the correct place, if those can be shouted out in here. I know this, when at the very end of page two, when it says aligned with creating mixed income development, I don't know if that's the correct place, but shout out integrated supportive housing, since that was mentioned specifically how important it is to have mixed abilities and income in a way that they can have integrated housing and supportive or age friendly, just so it's also, if this is supposed to represent our values going forward, I'd like those to be included if possible.
Do we want to put the age friendly stuff under in page three under that as defined by the community, because that's what we talk about.
Okay, yeah,
we already talk about it. Right, we talk place about aging, some of the older residents, folks on fixed or diminishing incomes. We talk about a lot of different variables, but we can look in here and beef up. We say aging, older, but we can, so we put it in here already, but we can try to beef it up a little bit if you like.
Yeah, and then if they can address it there and then have integrated supportive housing.
Okay.
Yeah. And then,
I don't know exactly what that is, but
it's,
I don't have a copy
of
Opportunity
Knox. Yeah, we'll get you the letter,
yet.
But
okay,
it more describes what it would be the most supportive,
okay,
for those in our community who need it.
And if those of you who aren't familiar with that organization, it's a phenomenal.
Yeah, they're,
I work
wonderful
quite a bit with them, and they're fantastic.
So. And the last thing that was mentioned that I didn't know if this is to reflect our values going forward to the board for any changes that they might make, if there's a place where we said it, I don't know if we said it here, if there's a place to put it in the additional considerations for the stated goal to make effort to preserve the housing we have. Is that already in here?
That's in here, and it's stated in the comprehensive plan. So I guess the difference between what some of the people I think have said, and I don't want to interpret what people have said, but they want to see it. We talk about the need to preserve it, enhance it, and we talk about one of the specific things we have in here. So it's mentioned in the comprehensive plan as one of the top priorities with affordable housing is protect and enhance what we've got. One of the key things in this one is it says, I think it's the second or third one, it says explore possible strategies and means by which to preserve and enhance existing affordable housing, such as possible funding programs, assistance with, blah, blah, blah. So it talks about it even in here. It's in the comprehensive plan. What it doesn't do in here is mandate the protection of it. You know what I'm saying? So I guess an example would be the last two individuals who spoke. They live in a condominium now. It's considered affordable by the standards set up by the state, the price points. If all 15 get together and say we want to sell, even though it's affordable, they've got the right to sell. And the village is saying it's got to always be affordable housing. And right now the plan doesn't do that. It says we should look at ways of maybe keeping it, enhancing it, preserving it, but it doesn't mandate its preservation. You know what I'm saying? That's a difference.
And I think the other point too is that there are other affordable housing areas that maybe aren't interested in selling.
Right.
And we want to make sure that, I think when the board, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when the plan commission discussed as well the need to preserve existing affordable housing, I think it wasn't just about making sure it was unit by unit exactly the same. I understand that. Right. But it was also ensuring that the people who live in affordable housing are living in quality housing, that they have the means to make improvements to their homes, whether it's replacing a roof or making interior improvements. We certainly want to not just preserve the fact that there's a unit there, but retain or make sure that it continues to be a desirable place for people to live and that the quality of the housing is reflective of the quality of the community that this is.
Right, right.
So I think there's been some discussion, and we can certainly bring it back up again, either at the board level or maybe dive into it a little deeper at the plan commission level. But I there's been some discussion about how do we do that and what are the mechanics of that, particularly in areas that don't necessarily have HOAs.
Right.
So we hear you and appreciate the comments.
Right. Preserving, or protecting, and enhancing is in the comprehensive plan and it's in this.
Yeah. But to the extent that you want to state more, it's your prerogative.
Right.
One of the problems would be, I totally understand that you can't stay static. So the housing cannot stay static. So I totally understand that. On the other hand, if you look at, start looking at those, the sales and what's affordable, at least with the MLS or the whatever, is it MLS? Mm-hmm. Or,
yeah.
The sales and what's affordable, if you knock down four buildings in River Forest, you will knock out a good portion of our affordable housing. I mean, you're going to knock that percentage way down. So I understand you have a TIF zone or you have buildings they come to their useful cycle and they're too expensive to maintain or they're falling apart. I got all that, but so you can't force it, and I don't think it would be right to force it to say, hey, well, you're knocking down your developer, you can't knock down this. The only way you're going to knock down this building is to replace it with 100% what was in there. I don't think that would be good for the business guy. On the other hand, for the affordable part, it's not too good on the other side. So I thought maybe the plan needs to somehow, you know, it's nice to say, hey, we'd like to preserve clean water while we're dumping stuff into it. Somehow the plan needs to say something, and then I'm not so sure how to say how we're going to replace this affordable housing or how we're going to keep the affordable housing here, because truly a TIF zone, these TIF zones will knock out a good portion of it. There's no doubt looking at those real estate figures.
But those buildings, when any developer would go through the development review board, and that is the moment where we can say it, when they say, okay, we want an extra floor, we want larger density, that's where we can say, okay, well, you need to provide affordable housing, and that can, you know, and it can be done on a case by case basis depending on you know, the circumstances on that particular lot. So I think that the DRB is that mechanism that's gonna that they have to go through, where we can stop and say, wait a minute, this is all affordable housing that's going to be gone. We have to act now on this one and require some sort of affordable housing.
That's my take
on what we have in here.
Right.
Let me know if I'm missing.
No,
something.
Not only in here, but in the comprehensive plan. And as Chairman Crosby said, when the Development Review Board, the DRB, presides over a proposed development as part of a planned unit development or planned development application, which all multifamily or mixed use has to be, they would be looking at this plan, they were looking at the comprehensive plan for standards to see if they meet the intent. Both in this plan and in the comprehensive plan, it says preserve, protect, and enhance existing. In the event that existing affordable housing property gets redeveloped, efforts should be made to provide additional affordable housing as part of the new development being proposed.
Right.
So that language is in there. So it would be incumbent then upon the DRB to interpret that as an application is put forward.
And that's why with that bullet point number four, where we say, you know, that the plan development standards specifically identify consistency with the goals and policies of the affordable housing plan, so that, again, to remind everyone, it's on the DRB, hey, you need to look at the affordable housing plan and make sure that we're complying with that when we evaluate this developer that comes through or development.
So it comes back up. I know you can't force these people.
Right.
And
correct.
I don't want you to force them.
And as of right now, we don't have anything like that. So when someone on the DRB is evaluating that, they're not considering the affordable housing. It's, you know, the public that usually brings it up.
To Mr. Armalis's point, though, why we can't force it, what we're able to force now is the discussion.
Yes. There you go.
At the time development is being considered, and right now we don't. But with this, we can. So we can't force them to do something, but we can force the fact that they have a discussion with it in this room in front of the neighbors and the village DRB and the village board as to why or why not they're proposing something, because it's in here in the comprehensive plan. So the discussion now has to come forward.
Yeah, I'm really glad that was added, number four.
So.
And those standards have evolved. In 2019, the village board added a modification to consider the impact to pedestrian areas and accessibility for disabled people.
Yep.
So that we're looking at not just pedestrians who are using their feet, but other
Modes of transportation.
Modes of transportation.
Assisted
as well,
transportation.
Right. So those standards can evolve as the community evolves.
Right.
Okay.
One other thing I found, and I know you had a little row with Mr. Lauber about this, but
Dan and I go way back.
15 to 20% business here on page, where you say it might be desirable to limit the number of affordable units, for example, 15 to 20%, as the goal of such a development should be more aligned with creating a mixed income development. To me,
where's that sentence?
That's in
bottom of page two.
Yeah, under context limitations.
Yeah, and again, I'm fine. That sentence doesn't need to be in there. I mean, the remaining balance of that paragraph addresses what we need to address. That's fine. I got no problem taking
it. It just seems to me you should just treat rich guys and poor guys the same way. So we never say, hey, it's going to be a building full of billionaires. You know, this argument doesn't go on in Park Avenue, New York, and we shouldn't have it here about.
And the main punch in that sense, and again, if it's not communicating that effectively, I would remove it. The main punch in that is that ideally the approach would be to create mixed income developments. So you've got some higher end units, some lower end units, some affordable. It's a mix of stuff, not sort of stigmatized as being super, super expensive or that's affordable or whatever. It's just mixed, and so it doesn't matter. Rich, poor, middle income, doesn't matter. It's a development in River Forest.
Just take out the, for example, 15.
Yeah, right. So the approach there is like what the trend is across the country in affluent communities all the way down to more modest communities. Mixed income is an approach you're beginning to see more and more and more. So I think it's
language.
Yeah.
The other thing that struck me was this opportunity knocks today. The whole letter just struck me. And for somebody that's hung out in neighborhoods of Chicago or little towns in Greece or Italy, and you know, these towns that 150 people or 500 people live in, or 26 in Oakley area or something like that, there always seemed to have been a person that was of special needs in these places. And whether it was a person that was allowed to, for instance, in the city, that slept in different hallways and the door was left open, or was given odd jobs, or the special needs persons in some of these towns in small rural towns in Europe that, somehow they were taken care of, the community takes care of them. And it seems like in America, we don't do that. And then it really struck me on, there was a waiting list or people in River Forest for that needed this kind of assistance. And it was striking.
Right.
And it was just striking how ignorant I was, excuse me, that through this whole process of looking at this plan, I never thought of something like this.
Right.
Is there something that we can do to try to, again, with the TIFs or any kind of these developments, to say we need to do something for our special needs people?
And as I was going to say, in the context of the affordable housing plan, there may be another initiative that lives outside of this effort to that specific need. But to get to what you said with the Opportunity Knocks letter, again, going back to that definition of as defined by the community, working in there more about the senior, but also putting in there sort of that independent young adults with development disabilities, where some language in there about, and we can use the language, we can use the language Opportunity Knocks suggested, but if we're talking about the elderly and we're talking about aging in place and we're talking about people of lower income, we're talking where this need is for affordable, I think to certainly highlight the need for these young independent adults with some disabilities to provide affordable housing to fulfill that need, it absolutely fits in that section. And I think we just need to make even more robust that section on page three, including all of that. So that would get at what you were talking about.
Thank you.
So I would see that on the lower half right now of what would be page three. Yeah.
This was a really striking letter. So if you haven't read it,
yeah, you and again, it's they're a great organization. They really are.
Thank you.
I want to add one thing.
Yeah.
I think it's very clear in here what the benefit of affordable housing would be to those who will use the affordable housing. I would love to boost the language in here, maybe as defined by the community, add a paragraph that would really describe the benefit to the village, to those who live in, let's call it, unaffordable housing.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
Right.
Because I think if you don't do that, then you're going to have a village full of people who are going to be like, all right, we're doing this because the state requires it.
Yeah.
And to help them get beyond that, I think it would help. Now, I'm open to language. I don't know what language to put in there, but...
But a benefit to all residents, you know, regardless of income or whatever. Yeah.
Right, and a rationale.
Right. We can, yeah. Yeah, so I think that whole section as the need or want as defined by the community can be a much more robust chapter or section, and we'll do that.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so I'm gathering that these are enough edits where we should...
Come back? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. So we'll do that.
The next regularly scheduled meeting of the Plan Commission is actually March 17th, but that's a little...
It's a lot going on that day.
Yeah, that might be
a lot
little
of drinking,
tight.
A lot of voting, a lot of...
The next regularly scheduled meeting after that is April 21st. Now, if the Plan Commission wants to meet sooner than that, we can certainly arrange a special meeting. But April 21st would be your next regularly scheduled date, which would give us more than enough time to get the changes made and get the revised plan again posted on the website prior to the meeting.
Yeah. I'm inclined to go to April.
I likely won't be here that date, but I'll double check tomorrow.
The 21st? Is that what you mean?
I'll be at a workshop in Colorado.
So... the week before that, or the
yes, there are different
the week before
Tuesday
that?
Night,
I mean, different the 7th or 14th.
Let me just
know we have
calendar.
Edits, but it doesn't seem like it would require a great deal of your time.
No, I
would
agree.
7th works for me.
Let me just double check our facility availability.
Yeah, they were. This would be the next one, and then they were talking.
And I'll try to get these changes made, Chairman Crosby, by the end of next week.
Okay.
So regardless of when the next meeting is, you'll have it way in advance.
Okay, that's great. And then are you going to check on the availability?
Yeah, right. The 14th, there's a Sustainability Commission meeting in this room, so I think the better date where this particular room is not already reserved would be April 7th.
All right, that's great. That's better. I guess the last thing I want to just talk about briefly was your concern about the amount of time between when we receive the packet and when we actually meet, that you expressed through email. And so, Lisa, can you just give us a summary of like what the process is and how much time how it works with all the committees and not only us?
Sure. So for most commissions, the packets are typically distributed the Friday before the meeting, Thursday or Friday. So at the end of the week, prior to the meeting. Under the Open Meetings Act, obviously there's a minimum standard of 48 hours for posting the agenda. Our goal, of course, is to always exceed that. So for the Village Board of Trustees, they received their packets on Thursday for a Monday meeting. The Development Review Board received their packets last Friday for a meeting this Thursday. So typically there's a weekend and a couple of days. That being said, if you would like additional time, you tell me what you need and we'll make it happen. That is the typical distribution schedule. We tried to get this packet out a couple days early. Typically would have gone to you this past Friday, but we got it to you sooner than that Wednesday, just to try to give you a few extra days. If you need additional time, you tell me what you need, and we will accommodate that.
Can you just send it out as soon as it's done?
So yeah, that's typically what I've been doing if for some reason the physical production of the packet maybe a day or two later, I'm at least trying to get the electronic packet out. so that everyone can start reviewing it and give you a few days lead time until the hard copy comes to your home.
Will that mean the electronic copy goes on the website too, so it's available to the public earlier?
Yes, so the same day that you received your electronic copy, which was last Wednesday, it was also available on the website.
Okay. I guess that's it, right? Anything else?
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn? Need a second, right?
Adjourn.
We're done.